White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 316.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family and the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we've had a very hectic, very busy weekend of Auburn stuff. There was a lot of hope going in. There was some nervousness and trepidation on multiple fronts. We didn't know if we were going to beat Georgia and win the SEC and get in the playoffs or not. We didn't know if we were going to keep our head coach or have to look for another one. And we didn't know what bowl game we were going to end up going to. And I think as of, you know, yesterday afternoon, we had the answers to all those questions. So let's talk about it a little bit. First up, I guess we need to look at the ball game, right?
Yes.
So let's look at the ball game, then we'll talk about the season, we'll talk about the coach, and we'll talk about the bowl, and a couple other things here and there. So this game was not quite the same as the first time 3 weeks ago. How did you see it, and what made it different?
It wasn't the same as 3 weeks ago, and I think there were a couple things. One is we, the collective, and I certainly underestimated the impact of Kerryon's injury on the Auburn offense. He really was – I mean, I think seeing the offense with him in this condition and seeing how Georgia could stop it showed how valuable he truly is. And I think with him at 30% or whatever he was, he was kind of the linchpin of the offense that everything else kind of works off of. And there was a point in the podcast last week where we were talking about this and you were like, well, should we just go to like a run and shoot kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And I thought about it afterwards. It's a lot like we were saying, like, should Georgia change their whole thing because they can't make it work against us? And the reality was, like, without Kerryon, you know, a lot of the other things on offense didn't work. And the other part of it is something I said last week, which is, you know, we played Georgia, then we played Alabama, then we played Georgia again. So, like, the combined defensive brain power, coaching brain power of Georgia and Alabama had two full games worth of sample directly against this offense to come up with a game plan of how to stop it. And Georgia had a much better plan this time than it did last time. Yeah. And Auburn, on top of that, Auburn didn't play as well as we played the other two games. I mean, outside of anything that Georgia did and injuries and all other stuff, Auburn didn't play as well as we did in the other two games. We just didn't. And some of that is the home, you know, not being at home. And some of it is just Auburn, you know, it's the worst performance we've had since the LSU game in terms of going in a game and executing. But even with all that, there were a couple of key kind of points in the game when I think it really turned. The fumble, which stood him when we were at the 10-yard line or whatever, and he got stripped and fumbled, and the block field goal. And I think the fumble particularly was huge. We were winning at that point, and we were, like, in control of the game, and we were kind of in Georgia's head still at that point. Mm-hmm. And the fumble was what got them back in the game. And I think really if you like graft Auburn's performance as a football team from the LSU through the SEC championship game, that moment right before the fumble was like the all the way up, and then we peaked, and then it went down.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I think totally that agree. Was the point in the game.
You could just see everything change. Auburn kind of deflated a little bit, but Georgia looked like they'd had electric voltage applied to them. They just went bananas. Like they
100%. Like they... Yeah. They weren't sure they could beat us before that. And that play stopping us there at the goal line gave them a huge burst of energy.
And what's amazing is that after that, the game reverted to every Auburn-Georgia game for the last 3 years, except for the last one. You know what I mean? In other words, before that, we were about to go in and make it 14-0, which was much more like the last game. After that fumble, it was we score on the first drive and don't score again and we lose.
Yep.
It's amazing how it flipped the script from 3 weeks ago to 3 years ago and since.
But even... like even at halftime, I felt like we were still in a good place.
Yeah.
Like it was 10-7 Georgia, and I felt like we could make some adjustments. We had been playing well after halftime the last few weeks. We could come out and change some things around. And the big thing coming out of halftime that took the wind out of my sails was the news that Carlton Davis was out.
Yeah, that didn't help.
That was a huge blow because if you go back and watch the first Georgia game, on a lot of those wide runs by Georgia's running backs, he's there and he takes them out for no gain. He was huge against the run in the first game and in coverage. And him not being in the game, that was the moment when I was like, oh, shit, we're in trouble here.
Yeah. Yeah, because that they were – well, I was going to say, because they – you're talking about us changing everything on offense. They actually did change a lot of things on offense. They went to the toss sweep, the wide runs. They didn't really do that much against us in the first game. They took everything outside. They just did everything they could to avoid the core of our defense, the front seven.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the secondary could hold up on the edges, that was fine. But, yeah, you take Carlton Davis out. And it's probably not a coincidence that they got a long touchdown run in the second half.
Well, and then he was out and Trey Williams was out. And I think that, you know, those two things really hurt us in the,
absolutely,
you know, in the run defense on the perimeter. So that,
yeah,
that was a lot of it. And you got to give Georgia credit. I mean, that they played better, especially I think their defensive line against our offensive line was much better than they were in the first game. In the first game, our offensive line kind of owned them, and we got big push and opened a lot of holes. I didn't even carry on hurt. It was obvious we were trying to keep him in the game but not run him, and I felt that like that was a problem. Like I
– yeah.
We needed to be running between the tackles more.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like we needed to just put one of the other running backs in, Cam Martin or Malik Miller, and just run up the middle a little bit more. We didn't do that.
Yeah, it seemed like they wanted to have him in the game but use him as a decoy, just like say, look, he's in. But they, if you watch that first drive, they really did do a masterful job of calling plays around him rather than with him most of the time. You know, everything went around him in the first drive.
But I think Georgia really figured that out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they were obvious, like, that he doesn't have it, and Auburn's using him as a decoy. And then they really crashed down on those outside short routes. Everybody was playing up close to the line. And also they were – you know, they were blitzing, and then they were being very physical with our receivers near the line of scrimmage and not letting them get off easily and get space. And that was this is something we saw with the receivers earlier where they had problems getting open against real physical coverage.
Yeah, it did seem like they figured out between not having to worry as much about Kerryon, they did figure it. And also, I mean, you could just look at him and tell he was out there because he wanted to be, but not because he needed to be. I mean, he could it, to me, it just like he was slumped. His arms were down. He just looked unnatural. He looked uncomfortably unnatural physically the entire game, and it only got worse. I was proud of him for trying, but you know, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe we would have been better just keeping the other guys in, because Malik Miller got 2 carries and Cam Martin got 4. And you just, I don't know. I feel like maybe
that's my thing, is like we came, there were some series in the after the middle of the second quarter, we came out and threw the ball 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were 2 or 3 series where he came out and just threw it, and then that, you know, giving it back to them. And I felt like we needed to try and put somebody else that had run up the middle 3 or 4 times in a row.
And we never really connected any long passes either. I don't think that
no, 0.
Yeah, I think that our young Slay, he had 2 catches for 14 yards, long of 9. That's just not what he's supposed to do. He's got to catch 40-yard, 50-yard.
And a couple of those were there, and it just the timing was off. Like, they were getting pressure on Stidham, and Slayton was having a hard time getting open and stuff. So that there was some chances there. But
I don't know what to make of our offensive line this year. There's been times I think they're awesome, and there's times I just wonder what the deal is. You know, they're very very inconsistent.
I mean, on this kind of thing, like, I give a little bit of credit to the other teams. Like, Clemson's defensive line is the best. It's not – nobody else is on the same planet with them. And Georgia has a lot of talented guys, and they blitzed a lot. And, you know, we didn't do a great job with the, you know, picking up the blitzes and stuff. But part of it was, like, we needed to be able to run the ball better. And Kerryon gets through small spaces, and he always picks the right hole and stuff. And that's, you know, that's valuable.
You know, it really, over the course of the season, there's great players at every position on great teams, but it really does ultimately come down to who has the best defensive line, doesn't it? It seems to.
A lot of the times. So.
Alabama and Clemson last year, and it could be Clemson and Georgia this time.
So, and then, I mean, the other thing is, you watch that, you know, the game this weekend, Georgia is really, really good. And so it makes it more impressive that we beat them the way we did the first time.
And it was third. I just want to hit this several times tonight. I have a big note. It was 13-7 in the fourth quarter. The game was never out of reach until garbage time. It was 13-7. In the fourth quarter, and we could have totally, if we'd had any kind of a running game going, we could have totally won that game.
Well, and that's the other part is, again, that's why the block field goal was so huge.
Yeah.
Because it would have made it a 3-point game at that point. It was a big moment and another huge special teams failure this season. So that was huge. That was a big thing. The field goal block. So I
see people acting like they blew us out. I'm like, no.
No.
They got a couple of scores late to kind of salt it away because the defense just couldn't keep going out after a 3-and-out, you know. I mean, that's what happens. Our defense plays great until you get into the fourth quarter of a game where the offense is doing nothing. If the offense is putting up points and keeping time of possession – in any game, then the defense plays great. But when you keep putting the defense back out there, and they're falling slightly further and slightly further behind, there comes a point against a really good team when they sometimes break. And they broke and gave up 15 points in the fourth quarter, but one of those was just a long run, and one was a 2-point conversion. So,
but the other part is, I mean, the defense didn't play terrible. I mean, no. I think to me, a lot of this is on the offense, and they needed to move the ball better and score better and run the ball better. I mean, the defense against Georgia – in this game against Georgia, Georgia was 2 of 11 on third downs.
Mm-hmm.
And scored 28 points. In the second half, they did not convert a third down against us. They were 0 for 6.
Wow.
So, I mean – the defense did really well, but also part of it was Georgia was getting a lot more yardage on first and second down. So they weren't getting in those third and long situations as much as they did the first time. But part of it was also that, you know, we couldn't mount anything when we got the ball. And they, you know, right. So.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, this team, you know, the defense has been the consistent always there. And so the fortunes of this team have followed entirely the performance of the offense. And what was interesting, too, is in this game, the offense really kind of followed Kerryon Johnson's effectiveness. In the first half, he was a little more effective, and we were – well, you can, let's put it this way. In the first quarter, Kerryon was not horrible, and the offense was not horrible. But as he declined, the offense declined, and eventually he couldn't do anything, and the offense couldn't do anything, and then eventually the defense couldn't do everything. And so, you know, we've seen that movie a lot of times before. I guess the X factor this year has also been Stidham, but he can't do it by himself. He needs that running game to open things up for the passing game. And when you say, you know, the running game is just not there, so Jarrett, go out there and throw it every play, it's just we're too one-dimensional at that point. So, I don't know. No,
you're right. I mean, just because we have a good quarterback and some decent receivers doesn't mean that this isn't a run-first, run-foundation offense.
Mm-hmm. Having a quarterback that can complete the number of passes he completes and be so accurate with him, that touchdown was beautiful.
It's a great pass.
That makes a lot of difference. That was the difference this year between, you know, 8-4 and being 10-3 right now, I think, really. Yeah. So we'll see what happens in the bowl, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So anything else about the SEC championship game? It's neat to be in the SEC championship game. I mean, I hate losing it, but we've now won 3 and lost 3. So we're 500 in them. We were one of the few teams that had a winning record in SEC championship. And by the way, I never thought I was going to be able to say that because we lost the first two. And I thought, oh, man, we're going to be one of these teams that gets the SEC championship game and never wins, like Arkansas or Mississippi State, you know. Well, no, or Missouri. Well, no, we won the next three, and we were actually winning. We had a winning percentage, and now we're at 500, 3-3. So, but, hey, we got there, and getting there is better than not getting there, you know. So,
yes, we'll talk about that. But 100% it is, and I hate – the fact that we got there and lost to Georgia.
Yeah.
Because I know some people are going to say, oh, this cancels out the other game, which it doesn't. But, I am still glad that we got there. And I did hear from a number of people how obnoxious the Georgia fans were at this game.
Oh, so. My gosh. The fans, the play, I mean, you know as well as anybody being from Georgia, and I lived there for a long time. I mean, the Georgia fans are like Alabama fans that can't back it up. So they're bad enough when they're not winning something. When Georgia actually starts thinking they're winning something, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, they hold back a little bit because they can't back it up.
Right.
But as soon as they start to back it up, then they go off the deep end of obnoxious. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's unbelievable. Wow. So let's see what's up next.
We talked about the SEC championship game.
Yeah,
we reached this point. How do you feel about this team in the season? Okay. After that game.
Well, I think this was certainly our best season since 2013. There's no doubt about that. It ended up being not quite as good as that year, but. Everything really just had to work for us that year. Nick never got hurt. Trey never really got hurt. The defense played as well as it could play. You know, I mean, we were very fortunate that year in a lot of ways. But injuries continue to be our bugaboo. And just the fact that, you know, if we were at a certain level, Kerryon gets hurt, we have two other running backs of his caliber we can put in there. Now, some might argue, well, we did. We just never played them. And that's a fair, I think. What do you think about that?
I would say one thing is we had one other running back of his caliber, and he's been hurt.
Yeah, that's right. So injuries again.
So that's it. This is the third four-string running backs you're talking about.
We have yet to see a game where both of them played and both of them were healthy. Because if you think back to the beginning of the season, Kerryon started out healthy and Petway was suspended.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kerryon got hurt in the first game, and so Petway came back in the second game and played till he got hurt, more or less, upon which time Kerryon was back and he was playing well. And so, you know, between last year and this year, we've never really yet seen a single game where we had the equivalent of Cadillac and Ronnie on the field at the same time. It's like, it's unbelievable that we've gone now two full seasons without having the two of them on the field at the same time. It's crazy.
I mean, so again, the guy who led the SEC in rushing last year, you know, basically was a non-factor for us this year, but despite being on the roster.
Right.
So, I mean, because it wasn't a dramatic injury, like a, you know, like a, you know, huge broken leg and they carried him off the field kind of thing. I think people have forgotten about Petway.
Yeah.
In terms of the SEC, but he's the guy who led the SEC in rushing last year. We didn't have him this year, and it's a huge factor for these games. So,
do you think we'll have either one of them back next year?
I don't think we'll have Kerryon back next year. Mm. I think he's going to go pro. I think that we've talked about the shelf life of running backs and the number of hits they can take and stuff. And I think he's impressed a lot of people this year. I think he's going to go. Petway probably should have gone pro last year, but he didn't. He came back, and now I think he's had such a rough year that I don't know if he would get drafted.
Yeah.
So I suspect he's going to come back, but I'm not positive about that.
If Petway were to come back, man, if we had both of them and they were both healthy, oh my gosh.
That's kind of, I mean, that's what happened to Georgia this year. I mean, they both came back and it was huge for them. So
yeah,
it'd be a different planet if we had both of them back.
Having both of them and Stidham and the receivers having more experience and new players coming in, and the backup running backs having more experience, more or less. Although that was kind of my original question was, do you think that they made a mistake in how they handled the running backs this year?
Yes, I think there were. I just don't understand it. I think Cam Martin is obviously a good player, and he makes plays when he's in the game. And I feel like he should have gotten a lot more carries. Now, you know, throughout the season, I mean, especially before the Georgia and Alabama games, there were other games where Kerryon Johnson was carrying the ball too much, where Cam Martin should have been getting 10 carries a game in those games, and to ease the burden on Kerryon to get him to the Georgia and Alabama games. I think that's the part that is most frustrating to me, because we would have been fine. We were beating those teams by, you know, 17 points a week or whatever, we'd have been fine with Cam Martin getting 10 carries in those games. And it would have said that would have been over the course of the season, you know, like 40 carries on Kerryon, 40 less hits and stuff.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's big, but you know, that's something I wrote is team had a great season. At the end of the season are going to be talked about. There are going to be games that Auburn fans talk about 20 years from now. Like people talk about the 2004 game or the 1989 game. People are going to talk about those two games.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a wonderful thing. And this team, I think the biggest thing to me is, you know, we all doubted them after the LSU game, and they got up off the mat and got better and better and better and played, you know, as to their potential in those two games and made and had huge wins. So I have enormous respect and love for this team because of that. And this, you know, whatever the game this weekend against Georgia, the taste of that, is it going to be the thing that I remember? It's going to be those two games. I mean, if you're really down about the team after this and the coaches and everything else after Saturday, give yourself a few days and then go back and watch the highlights from the Georgia game again and the Alabama game again, because those were so great. The wins were so great that we should be thinking about those and thanking the team forever for those moments. So I'm always going to love this team because of that, because of how they got better. Yep. And because of the way they play, they had a lot of heart and toughness and stuff. And, I'm excited about the future. Like you said, I mean, you mentioned the offensive line is a huge area of concern. We're going to lose, four. Mm-hmm. Out of the top, 10 offensive linemen, like six are seniors.
Man.
So, you're looking at offensive line next year with Prince Tega at one tackle and maybe the big freshman we recruited last year at another tackle.
Calvin Ashley.
And then Markell Harrell and Mike Horton as the guards and who knows who at center. Yep. So, that's a good foundation, but we got a long way to go to match up to how this group played this year because they were good. Mm-hmm. The defensive line, everybody should be back. Holland, I guess, theoretically could go pro. We'll see. Linebacker, we're going to lose Trey Williams. I don't think – is Deshaun Davis a senior?
Okay.
I think he's a junior. And then we're going to lose, the two safeties. That's going to be big. And I think Carlton Davis will probably go pro because I think he's going to be a first-round draft pick. I think he's really good. And I think – the NFL loves a guy with his size that can cover and can tackle like he can. And so I think there's a chance he's going to go pro, but
he doesn't seem to take any more shots either. He's got a concussion.
That's right.
So he needs to get
that's him. Right. So I think, we have some young guys in the secondary, but safety is a big concern. And then offensive line is obviously the biggest one. So, and then we got to replace the all world kicker, but we got his brother.
We're losing our kicker, man. I know we got his brother, but still, it's
huge. He's an insurance. You don't even worry about that position. Right. You don't think about it. So, but the interesting thing is the NCAA added a thing where the college football teams can add an extra coach starting, I think January 1st or some point. And they can put them wherever you want them. Mm. And Gus has said it's either going to be another defensive coach or special teams. And I would, after this year, I would vote that we go find the best special teams guy that we can get and offer him a bucket load of money. So,
no kidding. If we have any left after Gus's deal.
So you want to, let's move to that, shall we?
Well, I was going to ask you the other thing was who do you see as our, if both of our running backs go pro, who do you see as the starting running back next year? Cam Martin, or will they move Barrett up since he'll be a sophomore, maybe get a little bit bigger? He's more of a full-purpose back than Cam Martin, or somebody else?
It's a good question. Asa Martin, who signed with Auburn, mm-hmm. is now a top 50 recruit in the whole country.
Yeah.
I think it's – and he's going to be a great player too, but I think it's going to be Barrett. I think they didn't use him between the tackles and stuff this year. Mm-hmm. Cam Martin, I think, is a little too small for them to trust him to be the every down back. But I could see Barrett starting to go through that transformation that Kerryon and Trey Mason had did, where he puts on some weight and gets heavier and thicker.
Yep.
Upper body and thighs and stuff. Between now and the season and the next season, and I could see him coming in and having the ability to make people miss, but also the ability to the body strength to be able to take more of a pounding and stuff. So I would suspect it's him, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Gus was thinking about going back to Arkansas, and we don't know what happened behind closed doors, but ultimately what happened was that Brett Bielema, after all of his taunting of Gus over the years, gave him a $3 million raise, essentially.
Well, I think here's my read of what happened is there were some people at Arkansas who, again, we've talked about this, who genuinely wanted Gus, mm-hmm. and were looking around who could we get that could actually make us relevant and dangerous. And Gus was a guy that had, was from Arkansas that they thought they had a chance to get. And I think the other piece of this, again, is the agent got involved. Jimmy Sexton, and he kind of went over there and fanned the flames a little bit with the Arkansas people. Yeah. He said, you know,
that's what he does.
If you offered him a really big pot of money, he might think about it. And so then they offered him a really big pot of money so that Jimmy Sexton could take that offer back to the Auburn people. Go, well, you better do better than and then they had to do better. So I think he kind of played, you know, he created demand and played the two sides off against each other. The other part, I mean, is this is the cost of doing business in college football. This is how much the top coaches are getting paid now. To me, there's no more pressure on Gus now than there was last week. You know, this is how much the top 10 coaches of college football are all going to be making, you know, after this season. So I'm fine with it. You know, after the way this team improved and the way we beat Georgia and Alabama down the stretch, I'm 100% there, and I want Gus to be our coach for the next 5 years or whatever. And I'm glad we signed him to an extension. My thing is, I want a big buyout. I don't know what, you know, they have released any of this stuff yet. They probably even finished working it out, but I want a buyout of a, you know, like $20 million and no sliding scale or anything. So Gus cannot walk away, and Auburn cannot fire him when he has a bad game. There's not any discussion. There's not any national media, you know, ha-ha, Auburn's going to fire Gus because they lost to somebody next year. So because it will not be possible. That's my thing. Is I mean, it kind of, I want us to kind of chain ourselves to each other because I'm happy with Gus and I want him to be our coach and I want to take that stuff out of the equation.
Yeah. Well, my position all along has been that this is, regardless of how you feel about Gus, and we've talked about it more than we've talked about probably any other single topic on here this year, but regardless of how you feel about Gus, this was not the year to be changing coaches. Because you're going up against half the SEC, Florida State, Nebraska. I mean, who weren't you going up against this year? And it just is not a good year to be jumping. I was saying it was a seller's market, not a buyer's market, with the teams being the buyers and the coaches being the sellers. I mean, if you're a halfway decent coach, you know, at any level, then you could say, hey, I'm available and get probably a pretty good job this year in this offseason.
Or stay at your current job and get a couple million raise.
Absolutely.
There's several coaches that used it, and their agents used it to get leverage to get them more money, like Mike Gundy did in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and you better believe, if you're a halfway decent coach right now, Tennessee wants to talk to you. You probably don't want to talk to them. Right, exactly. But I mean, seriously, though, there'd be some years where if you were a halfway decent coach, you'd be hoping that Florida Atlantic, you know, or Florida International or Louisiana Monroe needs a coach. This year, Tennessee may want to talk to you. Arkansas may want to talk to you. You know what I mean? Mississippi State wanted to talk to you. So, in other words, you had a lot better chance of getting a big job this year. But conversely, that meant if you were a big job, there were fewer great knockout, you know, home run, grand slam hires out there. I mean, Chip Kelly was about the only one. I'm sure that Florida is happy with Dan Mullen, but do you think Florida's doing freaking cartwheels over Dan Mullen? No.
No, they're not. You're right. This is the play it safe and we're happy because we think he's better than the guy who left and we think we're going to be okay. But there's no dancing in the streets there.
No. And I mean, Texas A&M probably thinks that they have a home run or a grand slam with Jimbo. But outside of that 1 year when he had Jameis Winston and a really good defense and played Auburn and they still almost lost, I don't know that Jimbo is a grand slam, honestly.
I think Jimbo's a really good coach, and we'll see who he hires his assistant stuff. But Florida State was going to make him fire half the staff or more if he stayed there. And you know, all their problems weren't just caused by the quarterback being bad, so
exactly.
Be getting hurt. So I mean, I think he's a very good coach. I don't And I think the best part for me about the Jimbo thing is that LSU tried to hire him twice and didn't get him, and then A&M got him.
Yeah.
So I think the whole, like, Texas A&M LSU game and dynamic just got much funner for
me. That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about it. There's so many wheels within wheels, John. This whole SEC thing is just like, you know, I got to set my map up on the basement wall with the yarn.
That's it. You got to do the little, you know, the push pins. And you mentioned Mississippi State. You got to give them credit because they kept under the radar. Nobody knew what they were doing. And boom, they hired Joe Moorhead from Penn State, which is a great hire. And I can't wait to see what he does with that offense. And I'm not happy that he's in our division.
I'm told he's a great hire. I had no idea. I'd never heard of him. I had no idea who he was. People were like, Mississippi State hired Joe Moorhead. I'm like, who?
Let me say it. Joe Moorhead is like this year's Gus Malzahn, as when he was an assistant coach, okay? He is the offensive coordinator that people were talking about as a head coaching candidate. He had been a head coach before at Fordham. And then he went to Penn. Remember, a couple years ago, before he went to Penn State, you know, they were in trouble. They were mediocre. You know, they were talking about Franklin wasn't worth it and stuff.
Yeah.
And then this guy came in, and that's the last 2 years when their offense took off and it was great. It was this guy.
So maybe I didn't want James Franklin after all. I wanted this guy.
It's going to be interesting to see if Penn State's offense, you know, steps back without him.
Right. What does that do to Franklin? Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I mean, one way or another, we got a good coach. We got a coach that we know he's never had a losing record, and the worst we did was 7-6 when everything went wrong. You know, we still went 7-6. We were 8-4 several years, or 8-5, I guess. If we can get over the hump of the bowl game situation now, that would help because. Let's see. 13, we lost the bowl game. 14, we lost the bowl game. The only bowl game we've won with Gus was Memphis in the Birmingham Bowl.
Good gosh.
That's just not right. That's the only. Because the funny thing, that's another funny thing about Chizik. Chizik just killed it in bowls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Chizik ever lost a bowl, did he?
I don't know.
No, we won in 9, 10, 11, and then in 12, we were gone. He was out and gone. So, yeah. So, Gus has got to win two more bowl games to equal Gene Chizik. Love seeing that graphic? Didn't you love seeing that graphic during the SEC championship game of coaches who won a national championship in their second year? It's like Urban Meyer and all these big, there's like three or four big names, and then Gene Chizik. And I'm just like, man, Chiz just has to just sit back and that little grin, that little smile that Chizik gets. You know, Chizik just kicked back on the set of SEC Today, just going, it's me and Urban and me and them big boys up there. And I'm just chilling back here and talking about football and not having to worry about a thing. Good for him. Good for Chiz.
So you mentioned the bowl game. How do you feel about going to the Chick-fil-A Bowl and playing Central Florida?
Well, I'm glad that we're going to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl and not playing Clemson. I mean, I would have liked to play Clemson this year, if you know what I mean, but not in that game. Not in the old ACC-SEC, but John, I wanted a bowl game. I wanted a bowl game against a big name. What I'm getting is yet another reason to have to play a U2 song. I don't know if you've noticed it. I don't know if you or the other people listening have noticed, but almost all season, every time I try to think of what the theme for the show is going to be, like what are we going to, you know, what's the title of the episode going to be, and what's the music I'm going to use in post production going to be, and I keep coming back to U2 songs. I had Wide Awake in America, you know, and you know stuff like that. I went through several U2 songs, and I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning this morning, Wide Awake. Again, Wide Awake America, thinking, you know what? We're playing Central Florida. That's not a bowl game. I am coming home. I am coming home. Because this, John, is a sort of homecoming. This is not a team. I mean, I realize they're 12-0. I understand they're 12-0. I understand they're pretty good. They, you know, honestly, Central Florida is a program that ought to be as good as Florida State, if not better. They're in fact, I think they have the highest enrollment of any college in the United States. They're huge. They're in Orlando. They got like 100,000 students. It's ridiculous how big they are. And they ought to be a big-time program, and they've been growing. But it's still a homecoming game in my mind. This is like a game that you watch. It's the 11 o'clock SEC Network game, not a New Year's Day bowl.
I do. I'm not happy. I mean, I'm glad they were in a big, you know, six or whatever bowl
game. Right, exactly. That's the main thing. We're in a, you know, we drive 2 hours to the game, but it is a New Year's.
And their offense is really good.
Yes.
And they play a style of football where they pull back and they attack all the time. But at the same time, I feel like you do.
I'm sorry, you're dropping out a little bit. I think we're having a storm around here and Skype's giving us crap. Could you go back and do that again? Because I don't think people understood. I didn't hear you. But their offense.
Their offense is really, really good.
Yeah.
They don't hold back. They attack all the time. They're very dangerous. But at the same time, I feel like you do. We miss an opportunity. Like if Notre Dame had won one more game, there was a chance we could have played Notre Dame in a bowl game. And that would have been spectacular.
Exactly.
We could have played Miami in the Orange Bowl or something and kicked the crap out of them. And I'd have been fine with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, Richt
was needing a beating from us.
I mean, we could have played Southern Cal in the Fiesta Bowl or something, but no. I mean, it's what it is. So if you haven't seen UCF, they're very, very talented. They run kind of the Oregon offense. Frost was there when Mariota was there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And their quarterback is very talented. He's a good runner and a good passer. And they have a lot of talented guys that go with the ball in their hands. And they go fast and make plays. Defensively, they're solid. They got some real playmakers on defense. They're not big and as physical as some other teams. But I think, we're going to have a hard time completely shutting them down. So I think we're going to need to score some points to win this game. And the biggest thing is their head coach left. So it's kind of like the Memphis game in that. There's some rumors that Nebraska is going to let him coach the game. And from Nebraska's perspective, it's just good PR. If he goes in there and they play great, he could say, look, you can do this, come to Nebraska. But I don't know. That's not for sure. And some of it depends on, their interviewing candidates. And if they hire, the current offensive coordinator to be the head coach, then he may just – coach the team in the bowl game.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like every year one team wins the lottery of having to play a crap – I don't want to provide locker room material. One team – and I don't mean to denigrate Central Florida. I think that they ought to be a top – a power five, whatever you want to say it, team. They ought to be. They've got the money. They've got the size. They've got the location. They've got the recruits. I mean, they're a sleeping giant, Central Florida. And it's one of those deals where if you beat them, you beat Central Florida in the Peach Bowl. And if you lose to them, you lost to Central Florida and you're in the Peach Bowl. So it's like there's really no great outcome here. You can only avoid disaster. So playing Miami or Notre Dame or USC would have been the opportunity for glory. Playing Central Florida is the opportunity to avoid embarrassment. And I realize that that's not really accurate anymore because they're not the 1998 Central Florida. But still, the popular perception is they're not a Power 5 team, and you don't be an SEC team and go to a New Year's Day bowl and lose to a Group of 5 team. You just don't.
But they view this as,
Oh, yeah.
They went undefeated. They should have been in the playoff conversation, and the playoff committee, you know, snubbed them all year, and now's their chance to make a statement.
Heck, yeah. They want to beat our brains in. Of course they do. Of course they do. And that's what I'm saying. Your only option here is to avoid embarrassment or have embarrassment.
And I can't remember who played the – last year was Western Michigan, coached by P.J. Fleck. That was this the Group of Five team was in a bowl, and I can't remember who played them. It may have been Wisconsin or somebody, but they only beat them by a touchdown.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that every year somebody wins the or loses the lottery to play that team, and this year it was us. I'm not quite sure how or why. I'm sure there's a logical reason how it worked out that way. But this year, we're the ones that got left holding the, you know, it's like the gift swap thing where one person ends up with the fruitcake or whatever. When all the cool presents got claimed and we ended up with the fruitcake. Thanks. I'm sure it's delicious. Hey, did you see that Tennessee is so bad? The situation in Tennessee is so bad that Tennessee actually offered the job to the coach of the black hole of football interest. And he said, no, I'm staying in the black hole.
Who is that?
You remember where the black hole of football interest is, John. We've made it a point on this show once every so often.
Purdue.
No. Oh, come on. The black hole of football interest. NC State.
I'm sorry.
NC State is the AU Wishbone official black hole of football. Remember, any conversation about football that starts to involve Florida, NC State almost inevitably immediately becomes. You just can't help it.
And that's the thing. Like, the coach at Snooze College, like you just mentioned,
yes,
who had never won his division in the ACC, was offered by Tennessee and said, no, I'm better here.
That's just, good God. It's like they're standing on the street corner with the key to the office, and everybody walks by. They're like, would you like, excuse me, sir, would you like to, oh, excuse me, would you, I'm sorry, no, I can't stop. Okay. And people just keep walking by, like looking at them like, you know, like they're Billy on the street or something.
And I want to say, like, there's rumors that they're going to go after Kevin Steele to be the head coach, and he's not going to do it. So.
I was wondering about that. So is Kevin Steele not going to – does he think he's better off being the defensive coordinator at Auburn than the head coach at Tennessee? That's kind of hard to fathom.
No, Kevin Steele was a head coach a long time ago at Baylor, and it went terribly. And I think he – found out that he doesn't want to do that again. And also, I think this is the last job he's ever going to have. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to coach at Auburn another year or two, and then he's going to retire and go live on the lake. And I think Jay Tate said on his podcast, like, Tennessee could literally offer him $25 million a year and he would say no. Like, he has no interest in all the hoopla stuff around building a program and being a head coach. He lives very frugally. And he's not interested in a lot of flashy stuff. He's just going to go, you know, he already has a house on a lake in Georgia somewhere or whatever. He's going to go do that, and he'll be fine.
Who will be our defensive coordinator? I tell you what, as long as we can keep our fabulous linebackers coach, Travis Williams has impressed me.
Well, I think Kevin Steele is going to be the defensive coordinator next year and probably the year after that, but maybe after that he's going to retire. So we start thinking about it.
Right.
But you're right. We have a great staff. I'm not looking to go change a bunch of position coaches or anything. So
yeah, I'm kind of happy we didn't end up with a Florida State guy. Remember?
That's true. We had a discussion about that on this podcast, and I think I even advocated for him, and they demoted his rear end during the season, Kelly.
What? He got demoted?
I think they took somebody else was calling the defenses late in the season for them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we offered him a bunch of money to come here, and he stayed at Florida State. Well, that didn't work out. Worked out for us. I'm going to run a scenario by you and see what you think, because I jotted this down. It occurred to me. I think that let me as a caveat up front. We've you know, bounced back, and we haven't really debated this. We've just bounced back and forth the last few weeks that the LSU loss did or did not hurt us. And it, in some ways, it helped us, right? We were saying how, if we'd beaten Georgia, then the LSU loss wouldn't have mattered other than our placement in the four. And losing to Georgia, that's different. But here's what I want to say. If we had only lost to Clemson and then lost to Georgia in the championship game, I think we would have gotten in with two losses over Alabama with one loss with that resume, because our losses would have been to two other playoff teams, and we would have had a win over Alabama head-to-head and a win over Georgia head-to-head and a win over LSU. So who do you think would have gotten in, a one-loss Alabama, the only loss to us, or a two-loss Auburn that second loss was in the SEC championship game and the other loss was to the number one team in the country?
I think Auburn would have gotten in then, but it would have been it's another level of insanity with the Auburn-Alabama versus Ohio State.
Yeah.
So I think Auburn would have gotten in because, to me, the head-to-head thing, they value that.
Yeah.
And again, Auburn would have better wins. The Alabama and Georgia wins are both much better than any win Alabama has.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. So, and here is my
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
Under Gus, we only beat Georgia and Alabama in years we lose to LSU. Because we just keep losing at LSU, but those are the years we play we play Alabama and Georgia at home. They just got to get the schedule straightened out.
We have a good question about that, so hold that thought.
Okay. Well, before we go into the questions, I just need to take a second here, and I'll try to be brief, to point out that we need support to keep our shows on the air. And we have a new show, by the way, on the network. We have a third show we've added called On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. So if you're a James Bond fan, interested at all, we have an ongoing show now. It's on a third feed. There's the AU Wishbone feed that you know about because you're listening to the show. There's the White Rocket Entertainment feed where we do all of our other various shows all mixed together in that one stream. But we've taken the On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast out of that stream and giving it its own stream. So if you want to follow it on iTunes, just go to iTunes and search for On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. Or go to secretpodcast.podbean.com, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, secretpodcast.podbean.com. I'll also put links on the plexico.net page. I haven't done that yet because it just got, the podcast just got up today. We've already got our three World Cup of Bond episodes we did for the White Rocket feed. And the brand new episode just went up today where Alan J. Porter, who's co-author of the James Bond Lexicon book, he and I are starting out with Dr. No, and we're going to go one movie a month, just thorough discussion and in-depth geeking out on, between now and the month when Bond 25 comes out. So we've got 2 years to do 23 more movies before Bond 25. So go to On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast on iTunes or secretpodcast.podbean.com. Things like that, our ability to do things like create a new channel just for the James Bond show and to keep this show, the AU Wishbone, on the air, is made possible by our patrons through patreon.com. And if you want to be a friend of the show, get to vote in our power poll of SEC teams and other little goodies we're going to come up with in the off season, I'm sure. Help us to do a live show or two next season in Auburn or somewhere. We need your help, and that's go to patreon.com, patreon.com. You can just go there and go to /Van Allen Plexico or just search Plexico, and you'll see the page for the Plexico White Rocket podcast, White Rocket Entertainment. Our current patrons who do an awesome job of keeping us going are our big ones, Nicholas Cottrell, Joseph Fine, and Christopher Burleson, and then Neil Dyer, Steve Trewick, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. WeHaveDonuts.com. I hear Brandon on his show talking about them, but he never really points out. They don't just make donuts. It's not like you could go to Krispy Kreme or go to WeHaveDonuts.com. They make these amazing, homemade recipe, nothing like you've ever had before donuts. It's totally worth it. It's totally different from what you'd get at like Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme. They're amazing. Richard Stevens, and then David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, John McCune, Catherine England, Will Summerford. And then there's David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Tony Perry, George Gaston, Logan Chilton, Alex Nguyen, Clay Henson, Mick Vijacana, Chris Thrash, J.W. Rice, Wardam Wade, Dave Medinas, Nicholas Craig, Kenneth, Brent Rains, John Stubbs, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, and our one-time awesome donors. And I have to apologize to Alex Nguyen because I think he slipped through the cracks when I send you the names and I write them down. See, what happens is that Patreon lets me know when we get a new patron, and I try to immediately go and send you their email address for the power poll, and I try to write them down on my list here. And I think old Alex slipped through the cracks for a couple of weeks. I'm sorry, but I've got you on here now, and I'll continue to mention you. So you can join that crew at patreon.com. Help us out. Help us get to do a live show. Are you excited about getting to do a live show next year, John?
Very excited. And then I want to thank all those people for supporting us this year. It really means a lot to know those people are out there and that they think our show is worth supporting.
Absolutely. We were at like $30, you know, a couple of months ago. So when Auburn does well, people are interested in Auburn. They want to hear about Auburn. They want to talk about Auburn. They have questions about Auburn. And some of them turn to us, and we are very honored by that, I think. So I guess it is time to push the blue button.
It's time for listener questions.
Dun, 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 dun.
On the AU Wishbone podcast.
So what do we got?
All right, first question comes from Wardam Wade, who says, Gus seems to have addressed some of his coaching blind spots this season, but one that remains is his inability to see what seems plain to us as fans, that when a player is hurt but continues to be called upon. The game was close when Kerryon fumbled. I admire his heart, but adults have to step in and give healthier players a chance, right?
I agree.
I agree 100%. Like, I love Kerryon, and he has more guts in his pinky than most people do in their whole body. But, mm-hmm. you know, we were putting him in a bad spot there. He also says, is Georgia one of the dirtiest and chippiest teams we play? They seem to equate tackles by the headgear and body slams as being tough. It comes off as dirty to me. So ironic, since they still whine about Nick Fairley.
Ugh. Absolutely.
I wish we were healthy and had enough energy left to thump them. Oh well.
Yep. No, I totally agree about that too. In fact, one of my Georgia friends was asking me after the game about the game, and I'm just like, I don't even want to talk right now, especially with a Georgia fan, because I'm just so mad about how their players acted and how their fans acted. I was just very disappointed in both of them and kind of embarrassed for them, really.
I'm sure they don't see it as anything to be embarrassed about, but I really felt like in this game in particular, the Georgia players went above and beyond to hit players after the play.
Oh, yeah.
Especially Kerryon. Like, every time he was carrying the ball, a guy would hit him, pile on.
Keep piling on and keep piling on. Absolutely, yeah. And meanwhile, we got called for a late hit when our guy didn't even do anything but fall down. Could you believe that?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That was horrible. And that may have been on a touchdown drive. I can't remember.
This is the other part about the game that frustrates me. Is like, Georgia was trying too hard to give the game away, and we could not take it from them.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good point.
So, next question comes from Joey Miller, who says, Van and John, Auburn football is like riding a roller coaster, lots of ups and downs, and sometimes it makes you scream. Saturday was a screamer of a game. He says, who are the candidates to take Jay Jacobs' place as athletic director? I've seen very little on this other than Tommy Tuberville making a play. Will Auburn stay in the family or go outside? And he says, Merry Christmas, John, Van, your families, and the Auburn Wishbone family. I'll hang up and listen, Joey Miller.
Joey, we appreciate it. And we appreciate your support and your active involvement with the questions and everything. That's good. And we appreciate it. Happy holidays to you. No, I agree. I mean, you've made your case very clear over the last few weeks that you want somebody that's a professional business person that can manage a business office. Do you see that happening, or what sense do you have right now?
My sense is that, you know, I think they're going to do a nationwide search and look around, and it's not going to be I would be very surprised if it's an insider, good old boy kind of person.
It's not going to be Tubbs.
No, 0%. I think it's good. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to look around and try and find somebody who has experience running an athletic department, who has a good reputation, both on the, you know, the budget side, the fundraising side, and then, you know, keeping the school out of NCAA trouble and deal with that kind of stuff. So I suspect they're going to do a nationwide search and hire somebody who can do that stuff. So we'll see. Arkansas hired an athletic director today, and they fired theirs, you know, not that long ago. So it seems like this is something Auburn could do.
It does, yes.
All right, next question is from Dan Thompson, who says, would Auburn have been better off if Kerryon had not played in the game?
Well, I mean, the first drive,
that's a tough one to say, because I think there's the stuff we talked about, him being in the game and fumbling or whatever, but there's also, I think, him being on the field, even at not 100%, makes everybody else feel more confidence because they know how good he is. And I think there's a confidence in the offense with him in the game versus when he's not in the game. That's the psychology part of it, but I think it's true. I agree, like, we should have, you know, used other players more, I think, carrying the ball, but I think they were really trying to, they knew maybe he had 15 carries in him and they were trying to budget him through the game. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just really tough because on the one hand you see how important he is to the team, and not having him at all is disastrously bad. But on the other hand, having him out there where he's not able to hold onto the ball and he's not able to be effective is disastrous in a different way. I mean, I think we just didn't have a good option there. And that's the real tragedy of it, is that we didn't have another option.
Mm-hmm.
There should have been another option. Hey, I got to interject here right quick because I'd forgotten. Auburn Elvis has been going above and beyond the call of duty. I give him crap all the time just because it's fun, and he and I kind of do poke at each other on Twitter and stuff, and it's fun. But he really is an awesome guy. He did our logo for the show, and now he's really been working hard to try to help get our live show thing going. And I'd forgotten he had sent us a message earlier today, because I don't get on the AU Wishbone Gmail account as much as you do. I kind of like leave that for you to get the questions and stuff. And I'd forgotten that he sent us like a proposal thing for the for how to do our live show. Have you had a chance to look at it? Because I have not.
No, I've looked at it. It's good.
Okay. So, because he was kind of wanting us to see it before the show, and I just haven't had a chance. I've had family stuff all week, and I just haven't had a chance to do anything. So, is there anything we need to, like, send out a secret message? Like, I would say if we were on video, I could blink my eyes as a Morse code message to him or something.
We'll email him offline and talk about it.
All right. Well, I just want to tell him thanks. I mean, I'm sorry we didn't get to it before now. I just want to know, it means a lot. I mean, him and a bunch of these other folks have been stepping up. We've had people to offer us tents and tailgating spots and areas, and I mean, that's just awesome. You guys are so fantastic, and John and I really do appreciate it. We really, really do. So, and we're going to get something set up, and it'll be cool. So, okay, just wanted to point that out.
All right, our next question is from Auburn Tweep at AU Tweep, who says, this is probably the most succinct question for the podcast. Since an 11-2 Auburn team would probably have gotten in over Alabama. Should we be mad? Should we be more mad at our athletic director for scheduling Clemson 5 of the last 8 years, or at our team for blowing a 20-point lead on the road at LSU?
Yeah, see, that's a great question, and I like that. And the thing of it is, that's what I was saying a while ago, I think we would have been forgiven for losing to Clemson on the road by one score with a first, you know, second starting quarterback. The LSU, I think, hurt us worse. I don't think the Clemson game, because it wouldn't have hurt us in the SEC. And when the committee would have looked at it, they'd have said, "Well, I mean, it's Clemson, you know, it's literally impossible to have a better loss than that."
But if we had scheduled a worse Power Five team, you know, we had a home and home with North Carolina or whoever,
I got you.
UVA or, whoever, sure. Then we beat that team and we're not risking what we are by playing national power Clemson. Then there's no danger. This is kind of the discussion that was some of the discussion that was ran this week with Ohio State not getting in because they played Oklahoma. If they had played, you know,
that's right. Yeah, if they had played
a really bad MAC team.
Yeah, they'd have been in and Alabama would be out, and I'd be happy. That was the worst part about Saturday was not only did we lose and not get to go, but stupid Alabama backed in. Backdoor Bama, I've been calling them. Backdoor Bama backed in. It's ridiculous. They have no business in the playoffs. I was saying it actually helped them to lose the Iron Bowl because losing the Iron Bowl meant they didn't have to go play Georgia. They got to take the week off and relax and heal up. And also by not having to go play Georgia, they got the fourth place spot and they get to go to New Orleans instead of having to go all the way out to Pasadena. The best thing that could have happened to Alabama was losing the Iron Bowl. Winning the Iron Bowl would have caused them far more trouble than losing it did. And that is ridiculous. When losing a huge top five game or top 10 game or whatever, when losing it helps you, there is something inherently wrong with the system. That should never be the case.
I just don't have a lot of outrage for the playoff committee because I think they're doing a good job compared to the old system. But I do think we are, because two SEC teams got in, and I think this is going to happen again down the road. We're, 5 years from now, something like that, 6 years from now, this is what's going to happen. They're going to expand the playoff to 8 teams. We're going to do away with conference title games.
All right. Well, I was going to say, if you go to 8, you've got to get rid of the conference title games.
Dan Walker and one of the Dan Wetzel wrote this today, I think. This is how you do it. It's 8 teams. The Power Five league champions all get in automatically. Mm-hmm. Automatically. You win the conference, you're in. Right. It doesn't matter whatever your conference's funky decision-making thing to decide who their champion is. If you win it, you're in.
Right.
No conference title games. And then there's 3 at-large spots. One of those you have to reserve for the group of 5 team if they're in the top 15.
Yep.
So in this case, it would be Central Florida. Mm. And then the 2 at-large teams would be Alabama and Auburn. If you did it this year, you skipped the – you see, because there'd be no conference title games, so wouldn't have played Georgia. Under his system, with a first-round game, we would be hosting Southern Cal at Jordan-Hare Stadium this Saturday.
Oh, my gosh. I like it. That's exactly what we need. Yeah, you have to get rid of the conference championship games because you don't need to add another game on there, and you don't need to penalize. They've got a hybrid system right now that's as bad in its own way as the BCS was hybrided onto the bowls, you know?
Well, what the league commissioners want is they want their leagues to get in. So, the Pac-12 mm-hmm. didn't get in, the Big Ten didn't get in, and they want their leagues in the playoff. Mm-hmm. So this way, you guarantee to have your team in the playoff.
And you know what'll make that 8-team deal like you just described come that much sooner is if you get Alabama and Georgia in the championship game.
You're right, 100%. If that happens, and then it happens again in another year or two, then they'll be climbing over each other to set up an 18-point.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
All right. Next question. This is from Jared Albrecht. He has the comic book battle for the week.
All right.
He says, Auburn was Batman, Georgia was Bane. This was their first battle. Batman has been dinged up by fighting a murderous row of villains, and Bane came in smart, strong, and most of all, vengeful. Mm. Georgia picked up Auburn and broke the back of the Tigers, but this won't be the last battle.
That's right. That's a good one. He sure does come up with them, man. Good job, Jared. Way to go. Well, let me wait. Where's I've got a button for that.
Please clap.
Okay.
All right. Next question is from Nicholas Cottrell, who says, has anyone pointed out that UCF is the last remaining undefeated team, and Auburn performed quite well against their last two undefeated opponents?
That's a good point.
What do you think?
Well, I've got another.
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
So I have multiple factoids of the week. Here's your factoid of the week, John. I retweet this every year, don't I? It's been my most popular tweet. It's got like 50,000 views and thousands of likes and retweets and everything. And that I retweet it every year. I'm kind of like the Miami Dolphins of 70-whatever. You know what I'm going to say, don't you? You remember how the Miami Dolphins every year break out the champagne?
Yes, I do.
What am I celebrating, John?
The last undefeated SEC champion?
That was it. Was the 2010 Auburn Tigers. There has not been an undefeated SEC champion win the national championship since Cam's boys in 2010. And that will not happen again this year, thanks to us, when we beat Alabama.
It's true. And when we beat Georgia.
And when we beat Georgia, that's right.
Next question is from Auburn Elvis, who says...
Go ahead, talk over.
He said, so when did scoring first become the kiss of death? Back in my day, scoring first meant you had the advantage, not that the next 50 minutes would leave you wondering what happened. Is it really hard to block one or two blitzing linebackers? Oh, well, War Eagle anyway.
Well, I mean, it just is in that Georgia game. It's just Georgia every time except the last one. And didn't they score first in the last one? It's like the team that scores first. Yeah, I guess that's what you're referring to.
Team that score first are like 0-5 in Auburn Georgia games.
That's so weird. It used to be the visiting team always won. Now it's whoever scores second wins.
I agree. All right, next question is from Rusty Owens, who says, the thing I hated so much about Saturday's loss was two things. One was the normal 365 days of bragging rights lasted only 8 days because the Tide got in the playoff.
Yep.
Second, we had to endure a day of speculation about losing Gus to the Hogs, and in my opinion, setting the program back a minimum of 4 years if we lost Gus, Steele, and Chip. Why can't we have nice things?
Yeah, that's always the question for Auburn fans, is why can't we have nice things? And here's the thing, though, is that I always – look, this is what I always go back to. We are so in the box with Alabama. I mean, we are so – I mean, we're in the SEC West. We're in the same state as Alabama. And we just get that myopia sometimes where we think if we're not Alabama, it's terrible. And I just look at what we've got, and I look at 97% of the rest of Division I football, and I feel like we're pretty good.
This is a related question from Delvin, who says,
In hindsight,
how meaningless was the Iron Bowl? Alabama doesn't need a win, it apparently. The playoff selection committee disregarded it and the SEC championship game to put Bama in.
Yep.
And I get it from the playoff perspective, but don't let anybody ever forget that we beat them. Okay, yeah. Don't let them ever forget that, and you don't forget it either. We were the better team. We played on the field. We beat them. There's nothing they can ever do about it.
Well, you know, you go back to 93, Alabama and Florida played in the SEC championship game, and we're in the national championship hunt. Auburn beat both of them. And you can just kind of work your way forward from there. I mean, we have a history of beating teams that go on to other things, and we beat them, and we're the only ones, so it's just weird.
It's true. Next question is from Keith Dale Spawn, who says, After each season, Gus seems to significantly address the team's most glaring issue. For example, after 2014, we hired Will Muschamp to fix the defense. After 2016, it was the quarterbacks. Yep. It seems punting is on his radar. What do you believe is the most significant issue to address for 2018?
Well, it depends on the situation at running back, honestly, but also kick coverage.
I mean, I would say, to me, it's special teams as a whole.
Yeah.
I think it was 2010, our special teams were like the best in the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like we were amazing at special teams. Kick return, punt return, punting, kick coverage, all that stuff. We were the best. And since then, we've just gone down and down and down. And the special teams, other than the kicking, were bad this year. We didn't make positive plays, and a lot of negative plays happened to us. We have got to get better at special teams because there's going to be a lot of close games in the SEC, and those things are going to turn. And it's just doable. We have a lot of young, talented like linebackers and receivers and people on the team that ought to be on the special teams making plays. So I don't. It's just a question of like, you know, to me, it's like having an offensive or defensive coordinator who isn't getting that part done. So I think we got to shake it up and get somebody else to scheme that stuff.
Here's the weird thing about it to me, and I've talked about this before, is that it seems like when we first started out with Gus as the offensive coordinator, with Chizik as the head coach, we were all about taking every chance possible to generate a positive outcome. We ran kicks back. We did onside kicks. We went for two. We did all kind of stuff. We took a lot of chances. We went for it on fourth down, you know. We did a little fake punt thing against Alabama and got the first down. We were always willing to take chances and do these things to get our to generate opportunities. And it's like Gus the last few years has decided that he's just so conservative. He's so scared to death that something negative is going to happen, right? I mean, that's why he was playing carry-on so much, as he was scared to death that something negative would happen if he put in one of the other running backs. He might fumble, God forbid. Not that he might break a long run and have a good outcome. He was just scared. It's almost like Gus has spent a lot of the last couple of years playing scared. And so he feels like the only thing he can really trust is his offensive line and his best running back. So if there's a kickoff, you catch the kickoff, take a knee, and put his running back and offensive line out there. If there's a punt, you catch the punt or get out of the way and let it bounce and put the offensive line and the running back out there. You know, if you're kicking off, you kick off and put the defense out there so you can get the ball back, put your offensive line and running back. He's coached so much wanting to avoid the possibility of something bad happening that we haven't allowed the possibility for anything really good to happen. You don't try to block a kick. You just put your defense out there and try to get the ball back for your running back again. You know, it's just constantly playing it safe.
I agree for the most part and the conservative thing. I think one part of it is that we had back then, like in 2009 or whatever, particularly, we had less talent than other teams we played.
That's right.
And now we have more talent than most teams we play. So we don't have to do that. Even when we play Alabama, Georgia, we have the same amount of talent that they do. I don't think there's any big talent disparity between those rosters anymore. So I think that's a huge credit to their recruiting. Mm-hmm. The other part is like, you don't have to take as many chances because you don't need to, but you're right that sometimes even if the teams are equal, taking a chance like that can ignite your team and really create a spark.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All right. One last really good question here. This is from Emily Rios.
Yeah, Emily.
Who says, we've bemoaned the schedule since Georgia and Alabama became the away home game in the same year. But after this weekend, I'm more convinced than ever the schedule as it is makes success much harder to achieve. I understand the history behind AMN Corner, but personally, I think it's time to make a change. Mm. How would you redistribute the season to avoid the body blow game we just saw this weekend?
And home and away wouldn't affect that because you're still playing Georgia and Alabama. So what do you want to move the Georgia game up to the middle of the season or something?
She has a really good point. Like we, you know, playing Alabama, then turning around and playing Georgia again in back-to-back weeks, like this, that's really hard. You are whoever you are when you play Alabama. You come out of that game and you're beat up.
So do you want to put Louisiana Monroe or somebody after Alabama and move Georgia up to the middle of the season?
Well, I mean, we used to have a bye week after Alabama.
Well, they won't let us.
They
won't let us do that anymore. So,
that I don't think we can change when the Alabama game is. I don't think the SEC is the SEC and the TV networks want that game on that weekend. And I don't know. I don't want to play Alabama earlier in the season because that would just be that would really mess with us. I think. If they're both going to be at home and away, I am fine with like moving the Georgia game, you know, up to like October and moving, you know, A&M or LSU or somebody, not even LSU, but A&M or Mississippi State or somebody back to that slot.
If you, if you move the Georgia game up a few weeks, they won't have their star players back when they play us, John.
Another reason to do it.
That actually works out pretty darn well. That's
good.
Funny.
Gosh, I agree. Like if the SEC isn't willing to change it where we can get back on an either or schedule, then I'm interested in moving the Georgia game up 2 weeks or whatever, give us some separation and put somebody else in there. Put one of the Mississippi schools in there.
That works.
I thought that was a good question though, because I think it really does have an impact. Like it was a huge advantage having those two games at home, but playing Alabama and the physicality of that game and then turning around a week later and playing Georgia, you know, it was a huge disadvantage for Auburn. It really was.
But like you said, there's nothing we can do about that though. Yeah. Georgia got to go off and, you know, play crap team number one and then Tech. So beat down Tech.
And some years when Tech is really good, that's a disadvantage for Georgia. But, I mean, no, like they literally, their last SEC game was Kentucky.
Yeah.
Like the week we played Louisiana Monroe, they played Kentucky.
Right.
That's so.
Let's see, you want to take a quick trip around the SEC? We don't have much, obviously.
No, I mean.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Just had a couple of coaching hires we already talked about.
And Arkansas is still open and Tennessee is still open.
Good seats available in those coaching offices.
I mean, I think so let's predict who we think is going to get those jobs.
Well, I think if you spend over $100 at Walmart, you get entered in the sweepstakes to get the Arkansas job. Which it really ought to give you the Alabama job, but you know, there's an incestuous relationship between Walmart owns Arkansas, but their clientele is Alabama.
Good gosh. I think Arkansas is going to hire the Memphis coach.
Yeah, Norvell.
Norvell. I think, I mean, their offense is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very, very explosive.
You saw that Central Florida game. Good Lord. I turned that game off because I thought Central Florida was going to run away with it. And I find out later they went to like double overtime. I'm like, well, I feel stupid now. I should have watched the whole game.
No, I mean, Memphis, I've seen them a couple of times. Their offense is insane. And the most fun football game I watched all year long was Central Florida, South Florida. That game was bonkers.
Okay.
And those teams, I think it was the Friday after Thanksgiving in the afternoon, and it was like whatever 30, you know, like 38-36 or something at the end. And the last 2 minutes both teams scored twice or something. It was crazy.
Note to self to look for YouTube on it. Okay, cool.
Yeah. It was really fun. So, and it will give you a good introduction to this game, to this team we're playing, so.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, and other stuff around the SEC. I mean, a couple of Georgia players got arrested after our game.
Of course they did. They should have gotten arrested during our game. That's a whole other thing.
So how do you feel that the SEC teams are going to do in the playoff?
I honestly think it's going to be. Let me see.
It's Clemson, Bama, and Georgia, Oklahoma.
I think it's going to be Clemson, Oklahoma. The only thing that makes me hesitate is we know Oklahoma has a heck of an offense, but Georgia with that SEC defensive line can pull an Auburn over Oregon. You know what I mean?
No. The one unstoppable force in college football this year is Oklahoma's offense. Yeah. Like, Georgia may win that game, but they aren't going to stop them. That team is going to buzzsaw Georgia's defense and roll up and down the field on them, just like they did to us in the Sugar Bowl last year. So Georgia may run the ball and bleed the clock and make it so each team only gets the ball like 5 or 6 times in the game and that kind of stuff. But they better score touchdowns when they do that, because I don't think they could. I genuinely don't think they can stop Oklahoma. I mean, Ohio State has as good a talent on defense as Georgia does, or better, and Oklahoma carved them up in little pieces in Ohio State Stadium.
All I know is I don't want either Alabama or Georgia winning a national championship if I can help it.
Amen, 100%. I mean, I hate Oklahoma, and I'm no fan of Clemson, but I'm 100% rather Clemson win again. I think Clemson could beat Alabama. I mean, I think Clemson – Clemson is peaking right now. Yeah. They kind of did their thing where they trudged through the year. And their defense is going to give Alabama's offensive line all kinds of problems.
I agree. What's the power poll result? Let's get that in and we'll wrap it up for tonight. Let me explain to the folks, our show is too long. The post-Alabama, we laugh for 2 hours show was too long and couldn't go on the network. So that's how come you could only hear it on iTunes and Podbean last week. So we'll wrap this one up a lot shorter tonight. We're only at like an hour and 25 minutes right now. So what's the power poll results? We'll get out of here.
Still a lot of talking, an hour and 25 minutes.
It is.
All right. Top of the SEC, Georgia. Then Auburn ahead of Alabama.
Darn right.
That's right. And then a tier with LSU, Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And then a tier with A&M, South Carolina, Missouri.
Yeah. That blows my mind.
And then Ole Miss, Kentucky. And then we get down to the bottom, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Florida, Tennessee.
That also blows my mind.
Florida, Tennessee, the bottom two is just so great.
And I honestly – Florida should get like a point ahead just for coaching hire and future prospects, whereas Tennessee gets deductions for just not anything, just for being their situation being a god-awful situation. So, all right. Well, we appreciate everybody participating in the power poll. I guess we'll do that again at the very end after the national championship game and everything. We'll do one more.
I didn't want to say this on the air, but I'm going to say it anyway.
All right.
I'm going to try and set it up like a bowl pool that everybody pick all the bowl games.
Ooh. See, John, this is what I want. I want for our patrons to have rewards. I want them to get to do fun stuff like that. So if you could, that'll be – we understand if you can't make it work and everybody's,
But I can make it work.
If you can make that work, that would be so cool. So there you go, folks. You can get into what will be our awesome bowl pool thing.
Pick bowl games against Van and John.
Oh, man. That's worth at least $1 a month. Come on. Come on, folks. You know you got to do it now. Patreon.com or plexico.net. All righty. John, I had one little note I hadn't mentioned here, and I'll go ahead and scratch it off as the last thing on my list. We were talking about coaching salaries a while ago and how it's like $7 million a going rate. I remember how amazed everybody was when Steve Spurrier got $1 million a year to coach at Florida.
I do. People thought that was silly.
That's how quickly – you talk about this has escalated quickly, relatively. That has escalated quickly. Man. Man. All right. I guess that'll do it for us. Our time is up, and we thank you for your War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.